Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Marius Ruit. And of course, the thing we're going to be talking about today is the great showdown on the budget, which is sort of ongoing as we speak. Parliament is debating it, and they're going to vote on whether the framework is adopted by Parliament. This framework includes the VAT increase and basically the ANC budget as they wanted to do it. There has been some confusion, including from us on the show yesterday, about what exactly Action SA's recommendations were proposing yesterday, and we'll get into that in a second. But I think probably the important headline news from today, which suggests that the GNU may really indeed be over, is some leaked audio of Ramaphosa talking to the caucus of the ANC in Parliament last night, where he told the party's parliamentarians that the DA had locked itself into an unenviable position by rejecting the budget. I was quoting from Ramaphosa, "You must not interrupt your adversary as they are making a mistake, and they can see they've put themselves into a cul-de-sac. It's the most unpleasant position they have put themselves into." Ramaphosa said he had spoken to DA leader John Steenhuisen on Tuesday afternoon, who asked him, "Where do we go now?" Ramaphosa said, "I said the ball is entirely in your court. He asked if the ANC says we should leave the GNU. I said the ball is in your court. You have put yourself in this position, so you need to work your way out. You took a decision in the committee. That was your choice you made. We're the ones, whether you like it or not, who are leading the GNU, and we therefore have a responsibility to demonstrate that leadership, even under difficult circumstances or situations, and we will continue to do so," Ramaphosa told the ANC. He went on to say, quote, "You add insult upon insult towards the ANC and called the ANC all manner of names. I said, what seems to please you, DA people, is you want to be in government, but you also want to be opposition in government. I said, you can't have your cake and eat it." He then went on to basically say that Paul Mashatile may be forced to essentially begin removing the ministers from the DA, from the cabinet. He went to say of Action SA, who are supporting the ANC now and looks like they may be drafted into the government if the DA leaves, quote, "I said maybe we'll live up to that yourself because that is exactly what you have wished for. Action SA and other parties took a much more cooperative and practical type of disposition. In the end, they have put themselves in a difficult position and tomorrow is their choice and their choice is going to have consequences." Well, Maurice, that seems pretty definitive. The ANC is saying support our budget or get out of the GNU. At least that's how it seems to be. And it looks like the DA is going to not support the budget. Now, there's some question as to whether said budget is going to, the framework at least, is going to pass. That's being debated now in Parliament. We'll only know that, you know, probably by the time maybe some of our viewers are watching this, kind of 6 or 7 tonight. But regardless, I mean, what do you make of all this? I think what's interesting about this is it really does seem like Ramaphosa thinks it's the DA who's made the mistake here in not supporting the VAT increase. I think he's massively underestimating popular resentment at the fact that VAT is probably going to go up.
I mean, I think it's fair if you are a coalition partner and you're not supporting the government's budget, I think it's fair for the senior coalition partner to say, well, you guys shouldn't be in the coalition anymore, which is all well and good. But the ANC hasn't acted like a proper good faith coalition partner, I don't think. There was no discussion of the budget. They basically acted as they've acted for the last 30 years, which is said to Parliament, here's our budget and we're going to vote on it. And it was all easy in the 30 years before this because the ANC had a pretty solid majority after every election. This is obviously, as we all know, this is the first time they haven't had a majority. So they've been carrying on as they have been for the past 30 years. They still haven't got used to the fact that they're a 40% party, not a 55 or 60% party. And so, yeah, they shoot themselves in the foot chair, but I think they, you know, so, I mean, even they need, with the DA and the ANC, the GNU's got a pretty good big majority in Parliament and things could get passed pretty easily without the DA. I think without the DA, the GNU parties are exactly on 200 seats, I think. So it's pretty tight. So they need outside parties like MK or the EFF. But it seems even MK and EFF are also obviously quite opposed to this VAT increase. We don't know what could bring them on board. But it seems that the ANC is not interested in really giving up anything. I mean, they obviously didn't really give any concessions to the DA. I think if the ANC had made even, not even given every concession to the DA, just, you know, three or four pretty big ones, like the devolution of the railway networks, or, you know, changing some of the wording in the Expropriation Act or whatever, I think the DA would have gone along with a 0.5 point increase maybe in VAT or whatever. But the ANC was simply not prepared to negotiate. And now, yeah. But this all said, I mean, this is all pretty scary, and I really don't want the ANC to go in coalition with the MK or the EFF. But this is how politics works, and this is the first time South Africa's had proper competitive parliamentary politics, actually since the 1940s, really, because this is the first time that there hasn't been one big party in charge of parliament. So this first time we've had real proper parliamentary politics, and you know, it could go either way, but I mean, overall, I think it's probably better for South Africa than to have this one massive hegemonic party just getting things its own way all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that the kind of the implication I get from what Ramaphosa is saying, it seems like he's almost sort of confused about what the DA really wants out of the GNU. He seems to think that it's the ministerial positions that are the prize. Well, sort of, but the ministerial positions aren't worth much if you can't enact your policy. And he seems to kind of not truly believe that the DA is there in the GNU to change policy. He seems to think that they're just there for, I don't know, positions or something. You know, if you have a ministerial position, but you're just implementing the ANC's policy, then why would the DA stay? And the concessions that were leaked to the media and the potential deal that was almost signed between the ANC and DA, pretty moderate. Definitely some things the DA wanted for sure, but not exactly like the ANC was going to be, you know, crushed and driven, you know, into and forced to implement the DA's manifesto. I thought a former DA leader, Tony Leon, opinion piece on this with News 24 was pretty good, actually, at just kind of laying out all of this. It's titled, "You Are Not Serious People," referring to the ANC. And it starts with the line, "Had the ANC honored the provisions of the June 2024 Statement of Intent, which it signed, it would have avoided entirely the fiasco of last-minute wrangling, which has played out in the last few weeks." And I think that's actually it, is the ANC never really intended to cooperate here. It signed the Statement of Intent. It signed onto the GNU, just kind of expecting that everything would remain the same. And, you know, if they think that they can run the government without the EFF, without the DA, without MK, and just, you know, with this coalition where if a single MP is missing, they don't have a majority. Good luck, guys. Have fun, and we'll speak again in 6 months when you're forced to make a deal with someone. And exactly. I think the ANC's bargaining position is only going to get worse from here. So Ramaphosa may think that he's just pulled off some sort of brilliant tactical maneuver here in politics, but I think all he's done is shot himself in the foot. Your thoughts on that, Maurice?
Yeah, I think also, I mean, I put on Twitter earlier, or X, or seeing as we're in South Africa, you actually pronounce X, or sorry, that's a very bad dad joke. But say the ANC is still in the denial stage of grief. It still hasn't accepted that it's lost. It's the massive majorities it's enjoyed over the past 30 years. It's a 40% party now, with all that means, but still acting, as I said, it's acting like it's a 55 or 6% party. So it's going to have to come to the party pretty quickly. And I mean, as polling showed, the ANC is not doing great in polling. And also, our listeners will probably be quite interested in this. The Institute of Race Relations has got some polling in the field at the moment, and our poll will come out probably next week sometime, or maybe the week after. So that'll also be quite interesting. But yeah, polling that we have seen from Social Research Foundation and so on has the ANC polling very low, you know, low 30s or even low 20s without Cyril Ramaphosa. So the ANC is playing a very dangerous game here. And if they're not careful, they're going to be, you know, it's not impossible for them to be a 15 or 20% party in 2034. And it's also not impossible. I don't think it's super likely, but it's not impossible that Cyril Ramaphosa will be the last ANC president of South Africa.
Yes, yes. Now let's just quickly talk about Action SA's role in this. The ANC's decision basically to ditch the DA would not really have been possible, it seems to me, without the votes of Action SA, particularly if the Freedom Front Plus decides to also oppose the budget, because the Freedom Front Plus has the same number of votes as the DA, as Action SA. They both got six seats in parliament. And so it's kind of been a little bit strange as to what exactly Action SA was doing here. Yesterday, they sort of announced we've managed to get rid of the tax increases in its entirety, and they're going to redo the fiscal framework. Well, as it turned out, those were recommendations to the Parliamentary Committee, recommendations, not requirements, which could be ignored. Mm. And there's a tweet here from I'm not actually sure if he's he's described as a commissar for the EFF. Sanawo Tambo, who claims that Action SA themselves didn't know what they were voting for.
Tambo's on the Finance Committee in Parliament, I think.
Oh, he's on the Finance Committee. Okay, so yeah. He's an MP. Doesn't actually list it on his X profile. But anyway, MP Tambo claims, so last night, Oliver Dickinson went, blah, blah, blah. He was on SAFM. He says that he was debating with Action SA. And he says, I think it's important to listen to this debate interview and listen to how Action SA's MP comes to a slow, painful realization they've made a huge mistake, although he does not admit it. A recommendation in the committee report cannot legally amend VAT hikes contained in the adopted fiscal framework of revenue proposals. As things stand, Action SA supports the VAT hikes. And this seems to be pretty accurate, because last night, you know, Herman Mashaba was on TV talking about how they've stopped the VAT hikes, and this morning he was going on about how no, they had to agree to the VAT hikes to protect South Africa's sovereignty. Maurice, am I misunderstanding something here, or is this just an oopsie?
Yeah, I think probably the Action SA Parliamentary Caucus didn't really understand what was going on. It's all pretty complicated. I'm not too sure I understand it myself, but just from things what Tambo's been saying and people from other parties, they all seem pretty clear that Action SA hasn't stopped the VAT hike and so on. They've made a bit of a boo-boo there, and they've pretty much just supported what the ANC wanted. So, yeah, I think, this also maybe tells you something about the quality of people that come in new parties. I mean, there's Ethel Trollope in Action SA, who, I mean, I still think he's a pretty solid guy, even though I don't really agree with his party. But they've obviously, I think the guy on the Finance Committee for Action SA is a guy called Alan Beasley, and it's clear that he probably doesn't really understand various parliamentary rules and actually what he voted for. So it's always quite important, I think, to have this kind of institutional knowledge. And that's maybe also why the DA has been a pretty effective parliamentary party, because it's existed in some form going back 70, 80 years, actually. But I mean, in South Africa, it's been in some form in Parliament for 30 years now, and it's had MPs who've been there for 20 plus years. So, you know, there's a lot of institutional knowledge, and I think that's always quite important.
All right, let's move on to our next and I think last story for today. And this is news once again from the US, or more about South Africa than the US, but Donald Trump is hyped today as Liberation Day, in which America has apparently been drawing up sort of lists of all the countries in the world where they say they have unfair trade relations due to subsidizations or unfair laws or things that benefit local businesses in other countries, and that these are helping them to outcompete American businesses. And to punish countries for this, America is going to impose tariffs to target these barriers. Now, we don't know the details of that yet. That'll be announced by Trump probably, I think, after the show goes live. But The U.S. Government has drawn up some issues with South Africa's legislation that will inform any potential tariffs that will hit us. And the things they point to are the Procurement Act, as it currently stands, and the Expropriation Act, as to some of the big main ones. They also, of course, take a shot at some of the localization laws, which are very specifically designed to do exactly what the Americans are complaining about. They also, of course, take a shot at BEE over its, the fact that it places burdens on American companies that might want to do business here and having to give away lots of ownership to Black South Africans in order to do business here. Maurice, what do you make of this? I mean, these are the things the Americans are complaining about here that they've flagged are some of the things I think that we have also think of are holding back our economy. So it wouldn't just be in their interest to get rid of them, but it would probably also be in our interest.
Yeah, I agree. It is a tricky one. Another country using these kind of economic levers to try to change domestic policy. But I suppose if you are, I mean, that happens around the world. I mean, it's actually, I suppose, a form of very light sanction, I guess, using these kind of your economic strength to try to change local policies. Obviously, these are things that we think are, it's all policies that we generally agree aren't that good and should maybe be, should be scrapped. But then what's stopping the United States from using that kind of economic power to change other, forcing country to try to change policies in another way? You know, it's, I mean, maybe this is just speculation, but I do think, we are getting into a bit of a scary situation here where America is using its economic power to try to force countries to do certain things, and it's not always guaranteed that they'll be forcing a country like South Africa to do things that, you know, that you and me and probably most of our viewers would like, or most of our listeners. And a lot of this, I think, is happening with America doing it unilaterally. I mean, they're also doing it to a lot of their allies, countries that don't have policies like South Africa. They've been also been getting hit with major tariffs. I mean, a place like Canada, who's been, a good friend and ally of the United States for years. I mean, they've got the longest undefended border in the world. And now the United States is putting tariffs on Canadian goods and so on, and actually, I think, causing a lot of animosity in Canada against America. And they probably, Donald Trump single-handedly has helped the Liberal Party and Justin Trudeau's successor, Mark Carney, win the general election, which is coming up at the end of this month, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty conflicted on all this. I do think the stick rather than a carrot approach is maybe not always the right one. And I think it maybe could end up doing more harm than good.
Yeah, I mean, that remains to be seen. I would be curious to see what South African attitudes towards the US are, 6 months from now, whether they've worsened or improved. And, there's a possibility that this stuff could be used by ANC, by the EFF, by the MK to support, continuing the terrible policies that have gotten our economy in a bad position. Of course, we'd be in a better position to, tell the Americans to go away if we had gotten rid of these policies in the past and had a much stronger, healthier economy, if we were a mining superpower of the kind that South Africa really has the potential to be, or any kind of economic industry. If we were a superpower, we could be making the demands, not the other way around. But unfortunately, we're in a bad position right now. We've had such weak economic growth for so long. We have such high unemployment. We have all these social problems. Annoying who the country that tends to be either our third or second biggest trading partner behind China in terms of exports. It's not really going to do us too many good things in the future. But at least we can take comfort perhaps in the feeling that we won't be alone when these tariffs are announced. Yes, indeed. It'll be very interesting to see if any countries actually escape the great tariff hammer. That'll tell us some interesting things about the way global politics is shaping up. But anyway, that is all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be able to speak to you tomorrow. I hope you will join us then. Thank you very much. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.